Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. So if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us what your name is, where you live, and what you do for a living.
Sure. My name is Augie Galindo. I'm a physician assistant entrepreneur. I live in Prosper, Texas. My business partners and I started a testosterone replacement practice back in 2013 after having worked for one of the bigger companies, I think it's really the biggest company in the business still today. And so since then, we've grown to 4 locations plus telemedicine serving throughout Texas. And I'm now, as of 2020, moved into an operational role. So outside of our Prosper location, just kind of overseeing the practice as managing partner.
Awesome. So how did you get the idea to start this business?
You know, so we all had different pathways into it. We were owned by myself, 2 other physician assistants, and then a physician. So the story really starts back with my 2 PA partners, Glenn and Bill. They were in PA school together at Southwestern. A couple years ahead of me, I graduated from Texas Tech's PA school in 05. So I think they graduated in 02, 03. Again, a couple years ahead of me. But they became good friends then, to the point where Glenn, I think, served as Bill's best man in their wedding. He married another girl from their PA school, Wendy. She's amazing. And then their friendship, you know, carried on for years. And so Glenn had moved into gastroenterology. Bill had gone into neurosurgery and stayed in those kind of specialized phases. My side of the story, I was a fireman paramedic for a while. I did flight transport, worked in the ER, just kind of running the totem pole of emergency medicine as a non-provider, and then decided I wanted to take that next step. And so that next step involved either medical school or PA school. And after talking to a bunch of people, I ended up choosing PA school. And then I graduated in 05. So while they were working in their respective fields, I did 5 years in ER, ended up doing a couple years in internal medicine. And that internal medicine was home care. So I was seeing patients in their homes on a monthly basis, totally different from what I had done previously in a hospital-based emergency setting, but more primary care. So I was starting to get my feet wet in that a little bit. And then in February of 2012, my boss then got indicted and arrested by the FBI and the OIG, and that to date was the largest Medicare fraud case that had been tried, I believe. It was enormous. And so that meant I was looking for a job today. So that's a little daunting when you're in the medical profession, because usually you have to have credentialing to work in the hospital system or even most clinics because of insurance and the way that is all layered out. So I was looking for something outside of that space. And when I started looking for opportunities that day, I saw several opportunities to go into men's health or testosterone replacement. And it wasn't well-defined then, and it was still fairly new across the country. But as I found out, I was looking at 6 or 7 different opportunities, but they were all for the same job. They're all for the same company. And at this point, I knew within about a year or less, I'd say, before that, I found out that my acquaintance slash neighbor, somebody I didn't really know all that well, but this was Glenn, my now business partner, was a PA in gastroenterology, and he had left gastroenterology to go into a clinic-based practice and was doing testosterone replacement. When he told me he had moved into testosterone replacement, I hadn't heard anything about it before. It was completely foreign to me. But of course, it stuck in my head. So I'm looking for the job, decided to go bend Glenn's ear about it. And he's like, yeah, actually, those are all probably advertisements for the company I'm working with. I'm running their South Lake clinic, their first clinic, but they've got clinics all over the country already. So they started in 2010 in South Lake. And then, so this was 2012, they'd hired him to run it. And I ended up opening their 14th clinic in Las Colinas. And that was March of 2012. So some quick training, very quick training. You know, I was training under Glenn, and Glenn was heading up their busiest clinic. So he's seeing over 100 patients a day, not a whole lot of time for detailed training. So I either had to be a quick study or sink. And And so I chose the former, and at least I hope that's the route I took. And then again, like opened the Las Colinas clinic in March of 2013. A couple months went by before things started to crop up that just made me take pause as to the kind of the undertones of what was going on. It was a solid company logistically, financially, but coming into it as a provider who was also gun shy about some of the things that can go on in the background that do affect you, like you know, losing your job overnight because you're gets arrested. that led into some, I wouldn't say pushback, but again, cause for pause. And so when I started sharing those concerns with Bill and Glenn, who I now knew Glenn a little bit better and had met Bill through Glenn, they shared the same sentiments. And so we started talking more. As it turned out, they had already been talking about doing this on their own because by this point, Glenn had been at it about a year and a half. Bill had been at it for, I don't know, 8 months at this point, 9 months. And then I was the new kid on the block. So July of that year, we met for the first time, Dr. Young, who's our physician partner and owner, and then Bill and Glenn and I. And that's when things started rolling. They had, you know, a few ideas and some notes with, you know, it was pretty rudimentary at first. They had kind of a double space, page and a half list of things that they, you know, felt were pertinent to launching this thing. And I was definitely interested. I've always kind of had that entrepreneurial bug, and it's not something I'd ever really delved into, but it was always there. And I'm always looking for ways to analyze what I do and looking for efficiencies. And so I loved the idea, but I needed to put teeth to it, right? So I went back and asked for some time and ended up developing a business plan and the pro forma and a couple years of projections of what I thought we could do. So once we met again, August of 2012, that's when things really got cooking. Fast forward to October, I put in my notice. The guys followed right after me, and we officially launched on paper in November of 2012. Had our first clinic open in Louisville, March 2013. All that to say, I kind of fell into it, but it just was that the fact that somebody else was already kind of paving the road, and I came in as the fourth wheel to get things moving.
Awesome. So when it came to working with your partners early on, I think that many entrepreneurs struggle with finding the right partner. So how did you know that they were the right partners, especially as you mentioned earlier that you worked for a company that was run by someone that was, you know, like a better term, I guess, a crook, right? Not following the laws and got in trouble and you lost your job, right? So mm-hmm. I'm sure that kind of made mm-hmm. you hesitant of like, okay, like, can I trust people? Who can I work with? Like, what did that look like for you early on?
Early on, it was that the recognition of the same concerns that I had being echoed from where they were, right? And the fact that they'd already been talking about this for a while. And then, you know, when you're stepping out on your own, sometimes it really doesn't matter as much, even though it should. It doesn't matter as much that the partners are the right partners. It's the fact that you are stepping out as a team, right? So, you know, you're not the only one with skin in the game. Now, that said, I mean, financially, we were in way different areas. So my wife, I graduated from PA school and married somebody I went to PA school with. And so I was kind of in that same boat as Bill, except what was different for me was my wife we just had child number two. We had three girls. And on all three of her pregnancies, she spent the back half, like the last 20 weeks-ish of each pregnancy on bed rest, which, again, in the medical field, that usually means no pay. And so yeah, we had school loans, we had a house that we bought that was too big. So here we are, you know, house poor and missing a few months of income. And so when we started talking about putting our war chest together, they were talking about where they're going to move funds from. And I'm talking about who I'm getting a loan from. Right. So I needed people that would take that plunge with me. And so the most honest question of it is I knew I could trust them because, you know, kind of the, we shared like concerns, right? So that part was definitely a soothing aspect of our relationship. But beyond that, I didn't know what I didn't know. And so that's probably where the rest of it came in, you know, and that kind of fleshed out in the onset of our first year plus for sure, as to realizing the deficits that we were bringing along with us that we didn't even know we had, right? Because we were clinicians first, or really clinicians only for the most part, you know, by no means was I a quant, but, you know, I was the numbers guy out of our group that didn't really have as much, you know, sway as I would have liked and when it came to trying to develop that skill set for business. But that's kind of part and parcel to me for most people in medicine. And again, I was included in that tranche of the idea that, you work really hard to become good in medicine. And you see this a lot, and this is not to knock physicians, but you see it a lot in physicians because they spend so long becoming so good at what they do, but it's in a vertical that is very slim, right? You know, they may know neurosurgery really well, orthopedic spine, or, whatever the case may be, subspecialty upon subspecialty. And they're very used to being the smartest person in the room when they're in their milieu, right? When they're in that process. But then when you step outside of that, it doesn't always transfer. In fact, it rarely transfers, right? Business isn't something you just learn through osmosis. Well, you're smart in medicine, so you're smart in business too. We all knew very well how to run a clinic. And running the clinical side of things is one thing, but running the business is a far greater task, different task, right? So that's where I learned that we needed to become different partners individually and collectively. So I would say, and I would think that they would echo this back, as in speaking to me, I don't think we chose the right partners because ultimately, the way I look at it now, after being at this for, a dozen years now, you choose this, or rather, if I were to choose partners now in a new endeavor, I would really only choose to partner with other people who bring something to the table that I can't, and that is also absolutely necessary to achieve the mission, right? Because if you have duplication of skill sets without volume, then that's just redundancy, right? There's no efficiency there. But at the same part of that, it's got to be something that you can't easily replace yourself, because again, then what's the point of partnering? The only other caveat there is, are you willing to take that risk on 100%? And then if you are, then you should probably do it on your own. If you're not, then choose a partner, but choose a partner that has knowledge that you don't have, certification that you don't have or can't get, that kind of thing. So at the end of the day, we made good decisions that worked out, but probably for the wrong reasons if you're going to coach somebody along in a startup.
That makes sense. So can you talk about, testosterone replacement? Because I think that many people aren't familiar with what it is. And I think that, as you mentioned, it's still, like, obviously it's way more well known than when you first started, but I think that there's still a lot of people in this country that aren't familiar. They don't have the information about it. So why would someone do, like, what's a good reason to come to your clinic and to get testosterone replacement, and just what does that process look like?
Sure. So testosterone replacement, first of all, is the management of hypogonadism, or low testosterone. Low T is how everybody's kind of come to know what that is. But it constitutes a disease process that's largely environmentally caused. When you look at the smartest minds in the field, they're pointing their fingers at things like endocrine disruptors. So the way that our environment and the chemical nature of it changes the way our body speaks to itself. So it's not always a production issue at the heart of it. It's often a communication issue with what's a hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis of the communication pathway that creates the hormone testosterone. So testosterone is a sex hormone found in both men and women. Obviously, the levels are quite different, but the function is the same. So secondary sex characteristics for men, and then just androgenic effect in women, that again, balances are different from one sex to the other. But the symptoms that somebody will feel if their testosterone levels are low are really kind of the same for both men and women. And the ones that come to the forefront are the sexual side effects that come with it. And a lot of people think testosterone is all about either one of two things, getting big muscles or fixing your erectile dysfunction. And while those are pieces of the puzzle, they're really not the biggest pieces. And they're certainly not the most common reasons for people to come darken our doorsteps. So the conglomerate of symptoms includes decreased libido, includes the difficulty of either maintaining or gaining muscle mass, but also there are issues with cognition. So when you're not thinking as clearly, you're having trouble with word finding, that brain fog that's just kind of persistent and daily, that can be a sign of low testosterone, as can be the difficulty that people see maintaining sleep, not so much initiating sleep, but maintaining good sound sleep throughout the night. Also, things that you might not otherwise see or think about being testosterone related, as far as the way that that sleep manifests, you can see people stop dreaming as much because they aren't cycling through REM sleep and deep sleep the way they would normally when hormonally balanced people sleep. But the fatigue that you see with testosterone is usually the biggest symptom, and people often have a hard time putting their finger on it. So this is fatigue that really, when you look at the characteristics of how testosterone supports energy levels, it happens to start with sleep. But then that means that if you're following normal production cycles, you should see a peak of testosterone in the morning. It should fall throughout the day and then replenish overnight. So when you see fatigue patterns, that you're already waking up kind of sluggish because you didn't sleep well, but then early in the afternoon to evening, you're much more tired than you should be. You're starting to cut back on those things that you even enjoy, whether that be time with your kids or reading or cycling or working out, and you just tend to withdraw some because you don't really have the energy and the rigor that you once had that comes with hormonal balancing. So as far as the things that bring people in, I would say the most common thing I see is the fact that people all have a certain idea of who they want to be physically and energy-wise and mentally. And, in your 20s, when testosterone levels are not quite as affected by our chemical environment, but certainly can still be low, you are able to kind of push through some of those barriers. But as you start to age and the production gets worse, then those barriers get higher and more difficult to manage. So what I'll see is people who have a body image that they want to maintain in their mind. And throughout the years, they realize that their behaviors and their choices, of course, are the biggest catalyst to where they're going to end up, right? So they decide, for instance, I want to lose 20 pounds. Well, as years pass, they can say, well, I'm going to eat this way and work out that way, and then I'll get the results that I want. And that equation works year after year after year. And then it starts to slow down. You're putting in more effort. You're eating cleaner to try to get the same results. And then eventually those results aren't even coming, even though you're working out harder and eating even better and eating less. And so when there's a breakdown of that equation, people start to realize, hold on, I'm doing everything I've done in the past, but I'm not seeing the results I did. And that's usually when they'll come and say, hey, maybe there's something going on with my hormones. And then, there are some of the people who really only see a decreased libido, and that's the reason they come in. Some people come in because they just, heard of the symptoms and they want to check out where they're at baseline. And all of those are valid reasons to be assessed. I would say, as far as deciding to start treatment for testosterone in particular, I would definitely want to see a marriage of symptoms that are consistent with testosterone deficiency and numbers that bear that out in the biochemical sense. So those would be the reasons for starting therapy.
Makes sense. So what would you say the role of technology is when it comes to your business?
It is advancing rapidly. I think one of the things that ushered some new changes in, of course, was the pandemic. And back in 2017, I actually pitched to my partners. I wanted to invest a large amount of money for us into building out our own basically full integration suite, where we had the electronic health record and a Zoom-like environment and all the merchant processing and all the CRM stuff that you could throw into a mix and make it just a single vendor space. And that way we wouldn't have all these different pieces and all these different price tags all over the place trying to piecemeal it all together. And it just proved to be too big of a price tag for us at the time. Had that happened, we would have had probably a beta ready to go 2019 and been all tooled up when the world got turned upside down in 2020, but we didn't have that. So when that did happen and we were forced into the telemedicine space and had to learn to take the very carefully curated patient experience that we have in the four walls of our clinic and move that into the virtual space, we had to now think of things in a much different way, right? How do we make this secure? How do we make it personable? Because logistically, we're very similar to most of our competitors, right? There's not a whole lot of change between you come in, you get labs, you talk with somebody, you figure out if you're going to get started treatment, and then you start treatment. Where we differ is in our philosophy. And that becomes even harder to put out there in a tangible way in a digital medium. Right. So these are things that I'm looking at now. Again, being on the operational side, looking for ways that we can use automation in a warm way. I don't want to automate things for the sake of automation. I want to automate things that improve efficiency so that we can meet our goals of giving great patient care time in, time out, right? And so that also means that we will hold at the center of it that patient-provider relationship, and that part is never going to be automated because I want that to be human. I want that to be genuine. But when you look at, you know, the marketing funnel side of things and making sure we're not dropping those contacts, making sure that we're keeping eyes on managing all of the pieces of telemedicine and making sure patients are running out of medication, that they're getting their labs on time, that they're making their payments, that, you know, all of those pieces matter for the life of the business, for the health of the patient, for the, you know, health of our entire team financially and then securely business-wise. And if we are relying on a pair of human eyes to scour a 300-plus record database to find out what things they need to do, that's not very efficient, and there are going to be a lot of misses there. And so this is where technology can come in and improve our efficiencies and you know, diminish or if not eliminate bottlenecks. But then again, free us up for the things that matter, free us up so that we can have a more detailed conversation when the patient has questions to make sure that we're not rushing people through a process. So it's different in every vertical, right? And for me and our practice that is so just staunchly aimed at giving great patient care, you have to be careful where you apply those efficiencies because you can sometimes sacrifice the things that matter the most.
No, 100%. So like automation, obviously, I think some of the things that you're referring to, more specifically AI, is kind of like the buzzword in 2023, where it becomes, you know, comes to document review and things like that, you know, which you mentioned. But what about, you know, for example, people that are seeking out information, right? So, you know, maybe early they come on your website and they have kind of live conversation with AI chatbots, trying to understand specifically what the use case is and if it's right for them. And as opposed to calling and asking all these questions, they can get that kind of personalized experience with the form of AI. Is that something that you've looked into and considered?
It's something considered, and it is something that we have on the docket to kind of look at next year. And, you know, obviously AI is advancing every week, every day, probably every second, really. But that you want, let me kind of back up. When we decided to launch a marketing campaign, you know, when blogging and organic content was everything everybody was talking about 10 years ago, I wanted to make sure that as I stopped writing those blog posts personally, that the people that we hired to write the drafts before I edited them were capturing my voice, were capturing that desire to be the question answering practice, right? And I'm very open when I talk with patients about this part of it, that, and I tell them, like, if you found us online, we're probably not the first people you found. You probably found us because you kept asking questions you couldn't find the answers to. And you find the answers on our video or blog post or whatever that is, and that's why you're here. And ultimately, that's what I want. I want a contemplative patient, right? I want somebody who's come to knock on our door because, like, hey, you guys already had the answers. I think you know what you're doing. And there's already a kind of a canned report that can goes with it, right? And then when you match that up with a genuine interaction, they know they're in the right spot, right? So same thing, like I don't want to automate for the sake of automation, but if I can automate in a way that, you know, honestly, I'll flip over to a database that I have that has answers, you know, to my the FAQs, essentially. Now, I could send them to the blog post, make it very impersonal. Hey, just follow this link and read your own answer. But, you know, I'll lift that out of there, and I'll, you know, I have no problem copying and pasting it because, number one, I make sure that I say exactly what I meant to say. But, you know, you end up answering the same questions again and then again. So AI can really help with that. As long as you have patients that, number one, are comfortable with that technology and don't feel like they're being disenfranchised because you're shoving them to a bot. But then also appreciate the efficiency of it for themselves, right? Because it's not just my time, it's their time too. So that's something I definitely want to have out there, and I want to have it out there available for the right people and have alternatives available for the people who don't want that.
Awesome. No, that's great. I think that the people who are adopting AI now and next year are going to be way ahead of the curve. I mean, it's something that, you know, it's kind of like the internet. You know, it's something that I really believe people need to adopt. So in terms of your company, if we're going to have this conversation again in 1 year from now, or even in the future, where do you see things going? I mean, obviously, you're big in DFW, but do you plan expanding to other parts of Texas, even nationwide? Like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, so I've kind of ebbed and flowed over the years because of the struggles that we've faced. Just to give you the background on that, we started out as an insurance-based practice. And then as of January 1st of this year, we stopped accepting insurance for our in-clinic care, and we never accepted it on the telemedicine side. And that's just a function of the fact that insurance has become very adversarial. It's not, you know, a lot of patients balk at that because they feel like, oh, I'm paying for insurance, I should be able to use it. And while I agree with that, I also think the insurance should have to pay their part of the agreement, and I can't make them do that, and they don't want to do that. So ultimately, I just have to say no, right? So over the last several years, I'd kind of decided, hey, growth in that manner, the interstate or even intrastate, just it wasn't really on the horizon at that point. Now, having navigated that over those, you know, the last couple of quarters, we are now at a spot where that's back on the table for discussion. And so we already have reach throughout the state with telemedicine. But, you know, by and large, there are a lot of people that still want to have a brick and mortar to go to, right? And it's not just an age thing, but obviously there's a delineation there because of comfort with technology. But I do see an opportunity to probably move in areas that are not quite so saturated, like the big markets, but to establish maybe a smaller footprint in areas that can be well served in the kind of manner that we are accustomed to doing, and then taking that blueprint and moving it out to other states, right? Whether that be just areas that are local to us to make things easier, or just going where, you know, the people are. What that growth looks like, it kind of remains to be seen. But I definitely plan on advancing within the state. To kind of get our feet wet in managing things more remotely, right? I mean, more remotely than Hearst from Prosper. So that we can get an idea of what that looks like, and how do you manage quality assurance and quality controls in that manner? Because that's, again, that's the heart of who we are, making sure that patient experience is maintained and always held at the forefront of every decision and everything we're doing. But yeah, that's something that I want to be actively engaging next year.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's exciting. I mean, obviously, like for me, like I'm in Dallas, but it's cool, you know, to expand outside. And I think that, as you said, there are so many opportunities, you know, across the state, nationwide. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your website, or the best way for somebody to get in contact with you?
Sure. Our website is tctmed.com, so Testosterone Centers of Texas Medical.com. And people can email me directly. That's a.galindo@tctmed.com. That's A for Augie, G as in golf, A as in alpha, L as in Lima, I as in India, N as in November, D as in Delta, O as in Oscar. And I'm happy to direct them to whatever they need. If they just want questions answered, I can field those personally, or we can get you to the team that best suits your needs, whether that's our telemedicine services or one of our brick and mortars. We're in Frisco, Hearst, Flower Mound, and Prosper.
Awesome. Well, Augie, thank you so much for your time. We're rooting for you. Hopefully you guys keep expanding and keep growing.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Sure. Thanks.
All right. Bye.